Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay and it is my honor to introduce to you once again Sister Denise, who has been joining us for this entire series to look at aspects like today's topic, which is called sound judgment. Sister Denise has been on a spiritual journey for over 40 years with the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University. Sister Denise has shared throughout the course of this show how people have become what they have, the influence of society on the individual, and she asks that we look at ourselves in a very deep way and ask the question, is who you have become working for you? She asks specifically that we look at things like our conscience, our own value system, and see whether it has relevance in today's day and age, and whether it's not causing you, the individual, more harm than it is doing good. So, Sister Denise, a very, very warm welcome to today's show, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Magla.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. Sister Denise, a sound judgment, why has it become such a rare commodity in today's world? Why is that?
Well, sound judgment requires a person to really think and take things into consideration, consider all the elements that need to be taken into consideration, and think in a very dispassionate way to arrive at a good judgment. And in fact, within the system of Brahma Kumaris and Raj Yoga, we talk about the power of good judgment. So that means it is a personal spiritual power that you need to cultivate and develop, which happens over the years and which is intimately connected with your ability to have yoga, which is the personal communion and communication with the divine supreme being.
Okay, so Denise, you know what, I can't help but wonder, you obviously infused with spirituality and you bring it to bear on everything that you do, but look at somebody who is an accountant, for example, and he is trying to balance his books. How does one use spiritual principles in your vocation or in your way of being? How does it affect your judgment in respect of knowing which way to go when you're at work that's not a spiritual environment?
Everyone has to do some kind of work. Everyone is in some sort of a social context, and in any of these contexts there are situations that arise all the time throughout the day where you need to make a judgment, make a decision, for which you have to work out what is the best judgment, what are your options, and so on. So it comes to everyone in every context.
Okay, so it's not just related to spirituality, it's all aspects of life.
I think we need to be aware that when a person does a spiritual practice or tries to cultivate the spiritual side of themselves, it is so that it gives a greater depth and meaningfulness in their worldly context.
Okay, so does that mean that leading a spiritual life did you teach yourself how to think? How to make a decision? Did you teach yourself that?
I taught myself, I learned, I studied, I discussed. There are many components involved in finally arriving at skill in any area. So a skill or a power judgment is something that you cultivate, you study for, you learn, you experiment with, and then maybe we can also call it an art.
Mm. Okay, so what criteria do you use when you come to a crossroads in your life and you think, should I go this way, should I go that way, should I go that way?
First of all, you have to sit still with it so that you can feel it. And when I am making decisions like this, which may alter the course of my life, I need to be very still and be very stable so that I can get an intuitive feel for all of the different forces that are acting on me or on the situation. Then I have to look at it also from an intellectual angle and try to determine what the different options are. I have to have a look at what has happened in the past that has brought me to this crossroads and what is the trend of that momentum. And whenever you come to a crossroads, you come there because the momentum in some way stops and allows for it, so that you have a number of different ways. Then you need to calculate, and then you have to do a combination of taking a risk, calculating, feeling, sort of understanding, looking at what exactly is it that you want, you know. It's a simple question, what do you want? But it's really very deep, because I think that helps you to decide which step to take.
So, Sidonese, the reality for a lot of people is that when they come to a crossroads in their lives, when they have to make decisions on either small or big things, what happens is that their weaknesses rear their ugly heads and say something that is as omnipresent as fear. Okay, if I go in this direction, I'm afraid that dot, dot, dot. What then do you do with your weaknesses? And again, this question comes up in this topic like it has in other topics. How do you manage your darkness? Because the feeling I get from you is stay calm, stay logical, and do it properly. But people's feelings come into play. Their darkness comes into play. The fear. You're scared. What do you do then?
You're hesitant, you're scared, and therefore you will do what you're familiar with. And this is why, to me, the element of risk is very important. And I don't mean being reckless, but if a person is not prepared to take a risk, to go into unknown territory, they will never grow.
Okay, so that sounds like an act of courage.
Well, it is, and that's what you counter fear with, because fear is such a thing. You have two possibilities. Either you do an act of courage or you do an act of cowardice. There's no third way.
People often talk about, you know, following your gut, listening to your instincts. Is that any validity if one is spiritual?
Well, I think everyone has that intuition, and part of what spiritual practice does is to enhance your intuition so that it's something that you cultivate and that you can trust perhaps more than somebody who's afraid to follow their gut feeling. But you have to bring to bear all of the elements, your intuition, your thinking, your wisdom, your experience, all possible elements can be helpful in making a decision, especially if it has to be very fine-tuned and maybe have a lot of subtlety involved.
So, Denise, I've had the experience on more than one occasion where people have come to me to ask me to make a decision for them. And then I find that odd, because it was obvious to me that, you know, if you apply your mind just a little bit, they could have come to that decision by themselves. But then I realized that it wasn't so much as they couldn't think for themselves, because they were not lacking in intelligence, but that they wanted someone else to think for them. Why have we absolved ourselves of the responsibility of making our own choices? What's up with that?
The main thing is that when you get someone else to make a decision, you hold them responsible if it goes wrong. And I think people are unwilling to make their own decisions because they don't want to face the consequences of a wrong decision and take responsibility. So it's an easy way out to try and get someone else to do it for them.
Okay. So if one has to make a decision, there's a certain level of self-trust involved, that you've got to trust that you're making the right decision for you. What if you're in a position where you don't actually have faith in your own ability to decide?
Well, there's no guarantees, and this is why you have to...
So there's no guarantee of what?
Success.
Okay, so there's no guarantee that what you're going to decide is going to bring you the desired result.
That's right. So okay. You have to take a risk.
So you're taking a risk, okay.
It's very important to take a risk. You know, people who are afraid of taking risks, they are hardly alive.
People who are afraid of taking a risk is hardly alive, okay? But they still have a pulse, but they're not
just
alive.
Just about.
Okay, they have a pulse, but not alive. People, please check your pulse at home to make sure you're alive. Yes, go on.
You know what I mean?
I do know.
It's always, I'm afraid to breathe, I'm afraid to open my eyes, you know, maybe I'll see the truth, you know, and that will upset me. But we have to be able to handle all these things, manage all these things. What is wrong, you know?
Mm. You know, I'm thinking of individuals watching this show who do not have, weaknesses that we all have, but crippling weaknesses, like an addiction or somebody who is an agoraphobic, okay, who knows that at some point in his life or her life he's going to face this fear. You get some people who lock themselves in their home and cannot go out because they're petrified of what's out there, okay? Where I'm using these two as an examples because we have situations where people who are watching this show have such dark traits that it contaminates everything that they are and do and the ability to function in society. How do you bring yourself to make a sound judgment in that context where you know that you're your own worst enemy?
What you're describing is clinical mental illness.
Yes.
And so what you need to do is go to the doctor.
Okay.
You know, if you feel some lumps and you think, oh my gosh, you know, you go to the doctor. I think that there is a lot of stigma attached to mental illness, but it is getting better, and there's really nothing wrong with having agoraphobia or having a very acute mental illness. What's wrong is if you don't get it seen to.
Okay.
You see, so but because of the stigma, people go into denial of it.
Okay.
And I think that nowadays it's better, the social attitudes towards mental illness, they're not correct, totally, but better than it was.
How about an alcoholic, a drug addict listening to you right now who doesn't fall into the category of mental illness but still makes decisions? That is my question. You get people who have consistently made decisions that cause them great harm, and they've got this torrent of negative decisions behind them. How did they...
You know, when a person is fulfilling the criteria for being an addict, then they cannot make good decisions because addiction has been described as a disease of the will. There are many
Hold on. Addiction has been described as disease of the will. Okay.
So even if they know, they can't, because addiction is when you continue to do a negative action regardless of the negative consequences. And so you are no longer in the realm of psychologically equipped, sturdy people. You need to go and see a doctor, a therapist. You know, an addiction is not that much different from a mental illness.
Yeah, but going to the doctor is also a decision which some people cannot make.
But very often when somebody is an identified addict, it is the people around, or in some cases the police or the judicial system, which says you have to go for rehabilitation because you killed this person by crashing your car because you were under the influence, and we have records to show. And this is the difficulty, that there are some substances that are illegal because they cause a person to be irresponsible, and then there are other substances which are equally damaging, but they're legal. And so because something is legal, people think that it's okay, even though the consequences are really not okay, and that you can be seriously addicted to legal substances. And then there are other activities which are not substance abuse, but which are equally addictive, or that result in a person being an addict, like gambling, like violence. Not that violence is legal, but you know, a certain amount of it is legal. And shopping, people have with terrible credit card overuse problems. So there's lots of addictions, and the legal system maybe hasn't caught up with it or something, and certainly social attitudes haven't caught up with it. But because it is so prevalent, because it is so extreme, and because there are so many books about it, so many therapies that have described it and defined it, it's now very difficult to claim ignorance. You know, you know. And if you're not the identified addict, but the person who's living with you, you know, because there are people who are addicted to addicts, those are enablers, and it becomes a highly dysfunctional situation. And unfortunately, it's very, very widespread.
How do you know when you're making sound judgments? How do you, what is your yardstick to measure whether your decisions, your own decision-making process is on the right track?
I think you feel really good about it. Other people feel really good about it. You, there's a good resonance everywhere. You, it's good to check and verify your decisions and look at the feedback. There may be people who don't like your good decision because it prevents them from doing something negative. So they, you need to understand that that's what's going on. But when it's a really good decision, you'll feel relief. You'll feel strong. There are a number of internal signs and also external signs that will help you. And of course, the best yardstick is the outcome.
Okay. So, Sister Denise, God in your life, what impact does he have on one's intellectual abilities? A decision-making process is, from what I understand, an intellectual exercise. How does God impact on the intellect? Because what most people know is God is a heart thing. Is God also a head thing?
God has been called the intelligence of the wise, which is a very beautiful description.
Yeah, that is a beautiful description. The intelligence of the wise.
God is also known as truth, which has to do with what's right, what's wrong, what's real, what's not real. God is also known as the teacher. And so that means that there is a relationship with God that is intellectual, and to do with your conscience. So I think that when you want to really study truth, study with God, bring God into your decision making, that is also something that you can do with your faculties of consciousness. Decide something in advance, then refer it to God, maybe wait a day, you know, just to see if you get any other kind of, you know, extraneous thought that comes in to say, no, you should reconsider this, you know. And I think people who are very spiritually sensitive, they like to do this because they really can bring the influence of God into it and get a sense that, yeah, if I check this again, what would God do? What would God advise? You know, thinking about it that way, I think helps you to make a good decision.
So you invite God into your day-to-day decision-making process?
Yes.
Okay, and one needs a lot of internal clarity for that, doesn't one?
Mostly you need patience, because, you know, say, oh, should I just, you know, hit this person over the head? refer to God, you're going to have to wait to get any kind of answer. And of course the answer is, well, I don't think so. You know, violence is never a solution to anything.
No, I guess it's not. So the criteria that the process that you use is that you, in order to make a decision, you use it, and then you ask God, "What should I do in this situation?"
Not really ask God, "What should I do in this situation?" But you decide. You say this is a provisional decision, and then you kind of refer to God in your mind that, you know, does this sort of resonate? It's not necessarily that you have to sit down and ask, you know, because you have already a connection. Just referring, like you'd refer to your heart, you can refer to God, and look for the resonance. And then if everything seems right, maybe even refer to somebody else whose judgment you trust, especially when it's a difficult judgment. It's good to do that. And then when everything is lined up, then go for it. And you may just need a step of courage.
Is it wrong to factor your feelings into your decision-making process? The reason I'm asking this question is I have a friend who says that the problem with most people is they make decisions based on their emotions and not based on their intellect. That stayed with me because he said this a while ago. So is it ever wrong to factor feelings and emotions into your decision-making process, or you leave feelings out of it totally? Is decision-making just a head thing?
I would really make a distinction between feelings and emotions.
Oh, do tell.
I would put a line down the middle and cut it.
Yes.
Finer feelings, very positive. Emotions on the negative side. And your finer feelings are more likely to be stable. Your emotions are very up and down, and any decision made in the heat of a moment is likely to be a bad decision. Heat being the emotion.
Okay, so when you're making a decision, do you...
Well, I think it's very important to consider the finer feelings. But if you are in an emotional roller coaster, wait. Do not make any decision in the heat of the passion of the situation, no.
Okay, do not make a decision in the heat of the passion of the moment. Wait until you
are stable.
Yeah. And now, Sister Denise, age-old adage, love is blind, but marriage cures its sight. No, do you think that that people who fall in love make a decision based on their feelings and not based on the person in reality without the feelings? Because I come from a country where the divorce rate is shockingly high. The marriage rate is even higher than the divorce rate because people love being married in my country. So the fact that they've done it wrong once does not stop them from doing it wrong twice. So one of the reasons for that is the decisions based on the wrong criteria.
I think you really have to take a look at what does marriage mean. And
what does it mean?
Well, it's a contract.
Okay.
And it has to be constantly renegotiated. It's a relationship in which you decide to live together, to share your life, your time, your place of residence, your assets, etc. Usually to have children, to raise them, and to create a family. So you need to know that that's what you're going into. If you're falling in love with someone in the sense that you're attracted by them physically and you want to consummate that attraction, that is not a good foundation.
Did you get that?
Yes.
Go on.
Because that's not what marriage is about. Marriage means that you are expecting to spend the rest of your life with someone. And so there's a lot of agreements involved in that, because you have to work out how you're going to do this. You know, if you want to have children, do you have enough money? Can you provide them with everything that is needed for a good childhood, good education, etc., you know, because getting married means becoming a provider. And it also means, do you understand the person? It's not just their body that you like, but there's other things as well. You know, there's a person's history, there's a person's rest of their family, there's their culture, there's their all details about what kind of a person they are, and are you really compatible, and so many things you have to take into consideration which are nothing to do with passion.
Okay. So, Sirdeep, I've often heard it said that people have become exceptionally short-sighted. You often hear the expression, you only live once, therefore, dot, dot, dot. What is your response to that?
I think this idea, you only live once, comes from the paradigm of materialism, in which, you know, live now, pay later, don't pay at all.
Mm. Yeah, don't pay at all.
And it's all about, if it feels good, do it.
That's not sound judgment.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. And you see, also what spirituality tells us is, you don't only live once. You're an eternal soul. It's possible you may have only one life, but you might have more than one life. And there are many, many beings who have many, many lives, and they feel it and they believe it, and then that needs to be taken into consideration. Of course, there are many who just live once and behave like that, but it's not necessarily a recipe for success.
Okay, sounds actually like a recipe for disaster.
Yes.
Yeah. Why is it that people are so unwilling to even think that their behavior, speech has consequences? What is that block, the inability to see?
Maybe it's an unwillingness. You know, very often when people say, I can't, it would be more truthful to say, I won't.
Oh, there is none so blind as those who do not wish to see. Okay. So
we'll try and wake up someone who's pretending to be asleep.
Right. Okay. Okay. So I think, unfortunately, we've come to the end of today's show. Is there anything that you want to say to our listeners before we say goodbye to them?
I think really spend some time thinking and discussing with your friends what really is sound judgment, and maybe even talking with your friends, what's the basis of our friendship?
Mm.
You know, is it sound? What's important to us?
Mm. That sounds like a beautiful conversation. What is the basis of our friendship? Okay, you at home, I hope you've made friends with the show, because we certainly like having you watch us. And I particularly enjoyed Sister Denise's sharing today of her experiences of making a sound judgment, and particularly involving God in every single thing that she does, whether it's making decisions about her relationships and the people that she interacts with. So spirituality touches every single aspect of one's life. And so we wish to thank Sister Denise for her sharing, and we hope that you learn to make decisions that work for you and not against you. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye.